Constable Mae Bressel is. And this is World Watchers program on KAZU FM in Pacific Grove, California. It's Mae Bressel, and this is broadcast number 633. I'm getting the numbers off since the first of the year, January 23rd, 1984. As a matter of fact, for those of you that subscribe to the broadcast, I put December 16th on that last week instead of January. I think I want to hold that last year back. I'm really having trouble with 1984, so the sheet that goes with your broadcast on page 2, it's correct, it's January, but on the page 1 with the bibliography of information, I put December 16th, so change that in case you haven't already. Now, we usually begin with a resume of what we were talking about just a year ago this evening to see how fast the year goes and what was in the news at that time. That year ago this evening was broadcast number 581, January 24th, 1983. And I was talking about the Bulgarian connections, the influence of disinformation to shape our opinion of who shot the Pope in the Vatican Square there, and the connection, of course, Mehmet Aja was blamed. Originally, he confessed to the crime. He had a history with Nazis, with the werewolves, with the far right wing in Lebanon, the training camps, and with the Frankfurt, Germany, and around the world and in Turkey. He had killed a publisher in Turkey, a leftist publisher, and was released from the jail to go about and do what he did best, which is another assassination attempt, which, if he had connections to the KGB or Bulgarian, would have been the excuse for an act of war. And on that program, I did a lot about the disinformation of Aja and who was pushing it out. Michael Ledeen, the Minister of Propaganda, I was talking about his links to Alexander Haig and Licio Gelli of the Masonic P2, the Italian fascists, and Henry Kissinger, Opus Dei, and the links of Michael Ledeen to this disinformation, and Claire Sterling, the writer who continuously pushes her ideas that are pure theory and BS. About half of the things she writes about, their propaganda made out, they're really, a lot of it outright lies. Well, this year there was an article just recently, I quoted, in fact, last week, talking about the Knights of Malta from the Catholic, National Catholic Reporter, October 14th, 1983, a few months ago, who are the Knights of Malta? And in that article, it describes two members of Congress who are knighted by the Vatican with that dual loyalty. One is Senator Jeremiah Denton, the Democrat from Georgia, from Larry McDonald's home area, and Peter Domenici, the Democrat from New Mexico. And they carry on, according to Mr. Lee, the nightly crusade as part of the Subcommittee on Terrorism and Internal Security. And one of the people they work with is Claire Sterling, who I was talking about just almost a year earlier. And they mentioned that she was convicted of a libel suit in a French court accusing someone of being a KGB agent, and that person wasn't. And that a lot of the information for USIA, U.S. Information Service, that was taken over by Mr. Zwick, his real name is Z-W-I-C-K, not Wick, is disinformation and propaganda to hurry along that war against the Soviet Union. Also, just a year ago, I was in conjunction with the Vatican scandals and stories. I was talking about Alex Coburn of the Village Voice. For the second time, he felt that he had to write about Mae Bressel, or put down a Mae Bressel, because of the article I did on Grace Kelly's links to the Vatican and Licio Gelli and how she could be privy to information and be killed at the time she was because of what she knew going back and forth to the Vatican as a bagwoman between the mafia and the Monte Carlo, the gaming tables in the Vatican, and her politics with American intelligence. She is sort of the queen bee and courier for all these different factors. So Alice Coburn was putting me down in the Village Voice, and just a year later, January the 13th, 1984, Coburn has been suspended from the Village Voice for having received money, a $10,000 grant from a pro-Arab organization from the Middle East. And New York Times says, critic of Israel on the Voice got an Arab Institute grant. The funny thing is that if Alex Coburn knew how anti-Semitic I was, he'd probably be on my side. He probably thinks that because I'm a Jew, I approve of a lot of the things going on. I don't, and I quote him very often, his articles against Begin and the brown shirts and the way Israel behaves certainly deserves criticism. As a matter of fact, I actually felt sorry for him. If he weren't so mean to me and Bob Fass, he got us off the air on WBAI when we got close to Nazi connections of what was going on in the world. I felt sorry for him for being fired, because that $10,000 grant was to write a book about the Lebanon invasion, and I certainly think there are things about that and the role of Israel playing the games with the Falange, the Nazi family, and the Jamals, and the Israeli government certainly should be exposed for what it is. The Institute of Arab Studies gave him the money to write the book. I'm sorry he was fired, because I think we need the book, and I don't like to see that kind of censorship, and I think you need some voice attacking the policies of Israel. They're so holy, and the non-Jewish politicians get their votes, and Jean Kirkpatrick and Alexander Haig portray themselves as the great pro-Israelis, as does Helene von Damm, while they knife them in the back as Nazis and encourage their behavior, which gets the attention of the rest of the world. We fund them and send these weapons, and they do these massacres. So in a way, I don't appreciate his taking pot shots at me, but it's pretty nice all the way from New York City out to this station in Carmel for what I do that he has to find it necessary. And the Village Voice even mentioned May Brussel. But I feel sorry that he was fired, because I think what he was doing is necessary, and who's going to put up the money for it? Not the B'nai B'rith of the Anti-Defamation League. And I wish they'd give him $10,000 more to investigate Simon Wiesenthal, who's a big fraud if he ever came down the pike, or a few other people that pretend to take care of Jewish interests but serve the anti-Semites really better. I did mention last week, just before World Watchers started but forgot to put on this broadcast, there's a series on public broadcasting. Most of you get it in the big cities. Out here it's called public broadcasting, but the plays and series that you get are similar. I don't know what it's called in New York, but there's a 12-part series on Riley, the Ace of Spies, described this week's issue is working undercover in Manchuria. Riley follows British instructions to aid the Japanese Navy to plan to attack the Russian fleet. This is a 12-part series. The first part was excellent, and the second part this week, Thursday, out here, but you'll get it back east, maybe the same nights, or it may start in a week or two later, but be sure to see the series on Riley the Master Spy. It begins the last week with Zaroff, Sir Basil Zaroff, a man who makes and distributed weapons all over the world, who had his headquarters in Monte Carlo, trying to rearm the monarchies to take back Mother Russia. And then following Zaroff, Samuel Cummings set up his headquarters in Monte Carlo and in London to continue with people like the Radziwill families and the monarchies from all over the world to get them back on their throne, a combination of Nazis, Vatican, and monarchy working to make war against the Soviet Union to, as I say, get back their territory. So this was a program that just started out here this week, but look in your TV guide on that Riley and see what you can find and see if it's in your city. Ronald Reagan this week on Thursday will be announcing his plans to run for president. On our broadcast out here on the West Coast on NBC, his announcement will follow a movie called World War III. That's very interesting, because the same week that he's announcing his presidency, that will follow NBC 5 minutes off of World War III, so that you can hear Ronald Reagan say he's running for president. The Washington Post had a long story last week how the Pentagon plans to win World War IV. Now, I've cut out several articles and statistics about how many million or billion will die, and they're really serious. They're going to put submarines beneath ice caps, the Arctic cap, for the duration of World War III. And they're planning this. It's all in the drawing boards, just like Mein Kampf, as I mentioned earlier, before this program started, on the other program. It's all there for reading if you want to. So the president will make his announcement at 10:55 out here following World War III. And he's already planning at the Pentagon where the top people who run the government will go until World War IV comes along. Now, I'm going into, in a few minutes, into William French Smith and Edwin Meese, but before I do that and take what they're doing in Los Angeles and Los Angeles Police Department and the stories that are tangled to that, there is something that was in the newspaper last week, and the San Francisco Chronicle today, and the Washington Post January 13th, and our papers out here carried it. The two-part article by Jack Anderson, "The Death Squads Have Permeated Latin America." Now, what's important about this is that Jack Anderson is updating something that he has done on and off for the past 2 years, but is pertinent to exactly what I was writing about in the Rebel, the November 22nd Rebel. If you don't have those, I'll send you information, and I have reprinted it because it's not on the newsstand any longer. Jack Anderson says this, and it is pertinent to how these assassination teams were formed and what exactly what I was writing about, and he brings it up to today's death squads. He said, "Operating out of the Latin American politics is a far-flung network of death squads. It starts in Latin America," he said, "and now goes around the world. The purpose is to intimidate suspected leftists and deter movements that threaten the status quo." That is exactly what I've said, and the death squads are in this country, and have been going on by the thousands for the last 20, 30 years, but it's taking a long time before people will be able to realize how it permeated. He said they intimidate a suspected leftist. They decide, these people in power have decided what the status quo is, and that goes back to Zaharoff and Riley and Samuel Cummings and the Vatican and the Nazi group. He said their method includes kidnapping, assassinations, secret pacts, intrigue, terrorism, and blackmail. All of that. These bombings, kidnappings, the tunnels, the homes, the individuals, all of that is part of it. What is appalling, Jack Anderson writes, is the idea that the anti-communist, in quotes, "Murder Incorporated" germinated at the Central Intelligence Agency. See, that is what happens when you have the Kissingers working with the Klaus Barbies and the Fritz Kramers into the Pentagon. You take it one step further. He says sources familiar with the secret history of the squad said they were formed under the agency sponsorship in 1954. Now, the agency started sponsoring in 1954. What I wrote in the Rebel was that the death teams started in 1950 and worked up when Nicola Malocci was washed out through Nixon's office and down to Argentina, and Otto Scorzeny goes up to Spain. And I detailed the years 1950 as being when the teams began to be formed in the financing with the death of Evita Peron, but they were operational after 54. Jack Anderson says, whatever their origin, and I'm telling you their origin, whatever, he leaves that open, the death squads got out of control. Dedicated to the elimination of suspected leftists, they recruited assassins from the military, the police, and the security agencies. Now, that's where we go in a minute to the Los Angeles Police Department, where the Secret Service, the security agents, and the LAPD, along with the military, were forming Squad 19 and their death squads that they've had up and down this state since Reagan was governor. He said today the death squads are most active in El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras. Dormant death squads exist in every other Latin American nation. In all these countries, the squads are protected by the military and the government. And he describes a man who he talked to who described one organization. It's called the White Hand, La Mano Blanco. Remember Jonestown, the White Knight, the White Dragon. I've talked about the fellow that Frazier said was at the back of he sent a note to the Judge Franken at the time of his trial. He was charged with killing the Oda family. And he mentioned the name of a famous entertainer, and I've told you personally, I haven't been on the air, many of you know who it is, a well-known famous entertainer whose son belonged to the International White Army, the International White Dragon. He was part of this Murder Incorporated that was playing a part in the Manson family. They have different names, the White Hand, they use the White Hand, the White Force, the White Brigade. They are part of a team, CAL are the letters here, Latin American Anti-Communist Confederation. But CAL is really the Latin American affiliate of the World Anti-Communist League. That is what I wrote about Colonel Charles Willoughby, and working with Douglas MacArthur and coming from Franco and Heidelberg, Germany. This is exactly what I was writing about in The Rebel. The World Anti-Communist League, Jack Anderson, says is a right-wing organization linked to ultra-conservative groups in Asia, Europe, and the United States. See, Robert Mayhew of the Youth Organization, and they're using people like John Roselli and Sam Giancana. That is the World Anti-Communist League. Guy Bannister was in the FBI with Mayhew in Chicago. Guy Bannister had that office on Cam Street that backed up to Lee Harvey Oswald and went down to Asia and the Caribbean for the World Anti-Communist League. And, of course, then he goes on and describes a fellow with a pseudonym, El Lobo, who told him about the Honduran Death Squad in 1979. It used to have 85 members, and now we have 400. Remember how I've said that in Honduras, Joseph Mengele was seen there by somebody who told me about it. That's how I got those FBI papers, and Simon Wiesenthal and Mr. Mendelssohn in Washington and all the other people cover up the fact that those were the headquarters in Honduras for Joseph Mengele and the Nazi World Anti-Communist League that was going on. And I haven't gotten one Jew or one person in the State Department to admit to that fact of how the Hondurans got set up. That's how it got set from Martin Bormann to Joseph Mengele to the Honduras. Of where they had 85 people, they now have 400. They said they have successfully infiltrated every organization. Now they're at the universities and labor unions. That's why so many professors, so many newspaper writers, and so many labor people are killed all over the world. They bragged about eliminating 16 people so far in Honduras, labor unions, and university professors, but they've done more. They kidnap the victim, they write anonymous letters, and they send messages, men don't fight with flowers, they fight with bullets. And it tells about gunning one person down, just putting him in the trunk of a car and blowing his head off. One person that checked into a hotel that they didn't like. Now, that was the part one of the assassination article that Jack Anderson did. Today, January 23rd, he has another one, part two, the front for the assassins. He said, I've been investigating the Latin American death squads that practice politics by assassination, the network of right-wing groups that cooperate across international boundaries. That goes to Rome, to Licio Gelli, to France, to the bombings, to the Middle East, to the United States, to the Minutemen, to the Nazis, and he's now saying that that network spread all over the world. The death squad, a member of it in Honduras, is a physician. By day, he's an efficient physician, and at night, he kills. And that's, I don't want to digress on this, I'll do more later, on the medical school in Granada, and the team of assassins that work around those doctors, Mr. Jeffrey Byrne and Mr. Peter Byrne, who in the heck are they? Where did they come from? And I'm going to be doing a lot more on their training in England and the connections of the Tavistock Clinic to the Nazi death squads that go back to the 30s, long before even Hitler, there were plans for eugenics and getting rid of particularly black people and Jews. Jack Anderson writes about this ultra-conservative link with the worldwide organization founded in Taiwan. He has the date 1967. It began a long time before Taiwan. And that's why it's important that Madame Chenault is on the board of 20th Century Fox with Henry Kissinger and William Rogers and Gerald Ford and that gang, going back to the World Anti-Communist League, back to Taiwan, and the forming of Reverend Moon with Nazi money between the mafia and the Nazis. He says that this group in recent years, they have been including known Nazi white supremacist groups. He calls them neo-Nazi. There isn't a thing neo unless they were born in the last 20 years. But the hardcore Nazis, the Bormans, the Mengeles, and the Barbies have been very much alive. Barbie was just arrested last February. Each country's underground death squad has an acknowledged front group that gives legitimacy to it. It's an anti-communist movement, or they'll call themselves the Action Movement. They say they're anti-communist. They're actually the front for the death squads, and they get their training and their weapons from the police departments and the military in these countries. And the Escuadrón de la Muerte, the Squadron of Death, goes and kills common criminals, but it also kills communists or leftists. Jack Anderson has a long story, as I say, in the paper just today on set part two, World Anti-Communist League. And so that is an admission of a part getting one step further. All he has to do is to get the Guy Bannister and that gang down in New Orleans and the people that I wrote about in my article to the point of putting this together, and he will know the origin of these teams. Now, some of you could copy the article I did on JFK and the Nazis and spread that around. A listener in Houston, Texas, made 120 copies of the Hustler article on the Los Angeles Police Department and Western Gold. She sent me a list of about 40 or different 50 people that she didn't write 120. Congressmen, people that she's active in the Democratic Party in Houston, relatives and different people around the country. She is sending this out. She has already sent 120 copies. How many of you have sent copies to any public officials, publications on just the Larry McDonald Western Gold? You know, the Congressman Leon Panetta was out here seeing constituents last week before he went back, and a listener went to see him and talked about Larry McDonald and Western Gold, and he never heard of Western Gold. Well, it's no wonder, but there is a way to get information to these people, and she said she would supply him. Now, there are two big stories, the two most important stories, really, that I consider of the last months. They're important for the meaning of what's behind them and who's participating, and they're also important for the total news blackout on these two things. One is the invasion of Grenada and what happened there, and the other is the Western Gold's links to the Los Angeles Police Department and the suit of the American Civil Liberties Union against the Los Angeles Police Department. Now, out of all of this, on the printed sheet that I have that goes with this broadcast, I listed the winners of these activities. Number one is Edwin Meese, the Attorney General, future Attorney General of the United States. He is one of the winners. He gets this promotion, and I'll go into the reasons why. Another winner is Lord Peter Carrington, who now moves to become head of NATO, who set up headquarters in Barbados as early as 1980 to help overthrow the government and get rid of Maurice Bishop. Another winner is Henry Kissinger, who was brought in by William Clark in July of this year, 1 month after Maurice Bishop went to see him and wanted to get along with the United States. And Henry Kissinger was put in charge of the Central America Future Bloodbath, co-partner with Lord Carrington. As his reward, he will become the next Secretary of State, and if there's a constitutional convention, he'll become President of the United States. Another winner of all this is Sir Eric Gary, the deposed dictator from Grenada, who's on his way back. And the fifth winner of all this is Alexander Haig, who just got put on the board of Amway, and I'll do a lot on Amway Corporation and their holdings in South Africa and the fascist setup that it is, and then on the board of MGM. So between the two, he can travel between NATO, the Vatican, and the Nazis, be an international bagman. Now, who were the losers out of all this? Those were the winners in the last month, just over the Christmas January season. The losers, number one, Larry Flint, because he had the courage to publish the only national article in the United States on Western Gold, Los Angeles Police Department, and Larry McDonald, and he's the only person in the United States with the guts to publish the article on Murder Incorporated, the CIA Nazi death squads that Jack Anderson is writing about now, and the only publisher in the United States to write about Ronald Reagan, Edwin Meese, Alfred Bloomingdale, the Mafia, sex, violence, murder, counterintelligence. Larry Flint did all that. In his recent articles in Rebel, he has Vicky Morgan's story of Don Freed and Bill Turner and their interconnections that I'm going to in a minute. And he did cover the story of the LAPD that was not meant to be covered. And in return, the whole team of the Defense Department moved in and took over that place, he and his wife. And I'm sure when he comes out of all this, he's beginning to see some of the things that happened. I talked with somebody today, and Larry Flint is beginning to understand, and I don't want to take liberty to tell you where he's seeing the light, but he's a very bright man. And if he was chemically drugged and made to look crazy and suicidal or to give away his money and act nuts, those chemistries can be altered with medication. And if the medication is right, he will be back where he was. And when he gets back there, he will remember everything that happened to him, because that is the clinical route that this stuff takes, and his mind will come back. He was a loser because of what's happened to him for the time he took on these articles. The Free Press is a loser. The Free Press that was not able to go into Grenada for 5 days could not cover the El Salvador massacres a few weeks ago, where there's every indication that poison gases were used in both places. The Chicago Sun is a loser. I heard Mike Royko talking with Phil Donahue, and I have to send for the transcript. Royko tells how David Murdoch came into Chicago and plunked down $90 million cash in 1.5 hours and bought the Chicago Sun because Ronald Reagan doesn't want any more Edwin Meese or Granada talk. And on December the 16th, Edwin Meese was talking about no poor people in this country, no starving people. All you do is get David Murdoch, who owns the London Times, who has to work with Lord Peter Carrington, the new head of NATO, Murdoch's from Australia, and plunk in Carrington and Kissinger for the sake of Ronald Reagan, can plunk in $90 million, and in return, Henry Kissinger becomes the star of the Washington Post and articles in the New York Times. His ugly face is on every single newspaper. That was a payoff. The Vicky Morgan Act was a payoff, and this is a payoff. Henry Kissinger's star will rise because the newspapers that criticize this administration will be bought up. Kissinger and Carrington have some clients, and Henry Gonzalez better check out David Murdoch, besides whole countries, which they say they don't have, and Maurice Bishop, of course, was a loser because he deposed a CIA Nazi dictator who works with Papa Doc and the Korean CIA and Mr. Pinochet in Chile and every dictator in Central America. So Maurice Bishop exposed Mr. Gary. Bishop was trying to tell about Eric Gary. He knew him. His father was killed by him. He was beaten up by him. So Bishop was killed, and Gary is on the way back. Those are the winners and losers of this particular scene, based upon the newspaper articles that I have. Gary had the nerve to say, Sir Eric Gary, it was in the New York Times this week, that he's coming back, and he's the last elected government, and they've got to treat me as a statesman. This is a guy who was bringing in coffins from Chile so the medical school could use them for God knows what or how many. And the medical school was right on the airport, and I'll be writing a lot about that. Sir Eric Gary wants the United States present there. He wants a Cuban airport to be called the Ronald Reagan International Airport. He says he will direct the people who run the government. He will be a consultant. I'm going to be a consultant. And he wants a military escort, he says, as a sign of respect from the airport. The United States troops should escort him for his great return. And he will be the consultant behind anyone in power. He says there would be scarcely anyone in the Caribbean with my political expertise. And he said, I'm not a weak character, and I'm not afraid of anything or anybody. And also the article about Haig and Amway, that was January 23rd. I'll do more on Alexander Haig and the Amway Corporation in a while to come. Now, when I'm going to do a little chronology here on what happened to Edwin Meese and William French Smith and the way the turnover took place with William French Smith running home to California real fast. There was a reason he's running fast, and I'll get into that with you in about 2 minutes. Incidentally, Rebel has a long article, as I say, with a picture of the new Attorney General, Edwin Meese, and a description of him as the top advisor calling in Marvin Mitchelson to the White House for a private dinner for the sole purpose of telling him not to let the Vicky Morgan tapes out. And, of course, they all obeyed, and Vicky got her head cracked. And Edwin Meese is the one who called Vicky's attorney and protects the president. He's the Batman to protect the president. Also around Larry Flynt, incidentally, is Madeline Hare. I just met her one time I was at Larry's house. Insulting, rude woman. She has an article in the paper this week. She doesn't think it matters if there's an envoy to the Vatican. She told me Galen wasn't important, that her husband worked for him. The first husband worked for him, that he was a hitman. He literally did killings, she suggested, and for the FBI. Her first husband worked for Reinhard Galen, and she came up to me and practically attacked me. I don't like anything you do and anything you say. So now, when they asked her about the envoy of the Vatican, she said she thinks that's fine. Why would it bother her? Madeline Murray O'Hare is Madeline Murray, and you have to almost see her to believe her. She's the best argument for going to church that's come down the pike. And I read an article this week that Larry Flynt's turning back to God. After a few weeks with Madeline Murray, I would too. And we'll take a 1-minute break and then continue this on the next side.